This is episode 446 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abul Samad, and my voice is almost back to normal.
You almost sound like yourself, Sam. You're so close.
This is so long. I'm kind of concerned.
My throat is always weird. When I get one of those colds where my throat starts to get messed up, my voice gets messed up, it does, for whatever reason, it takes a long time to recover from it.
Wow. You know, did I tell you about the singer's helper stuff?
Oh, I've heard of this.
So if you have like a sore throat or whatever, and you're a singer, there's a spray you can get, and you can spray it in your mouth, and you can like just, it sort of coats your mouth so it doesn't feel like all, you know,
sort of like an anesthetic type of thing.
Kind of. It's like herbs and crap. but you put it in, like, I've
so
used
it's fully
it a couple
approved by RFK Jr. Though.
So yeah.
Your
so
recommendation.
I've
herbs
used
and
it.
Crap.
It's herbs and crap. Where's my bag? My gig bag's in here somewhere, and I got like 15 bags, one for every thing that I do in my life. But you spray it, and then I used it at a big show where I was like really sick, and it was like this really big show. It was like 2.5 hours of music and three different artists, and then I used it at another show where I was so, like, my throat was so sore that I had to use it between each song. And at one point, I just told people in the audience, I'm like, this is not drugs. I just have a sore throat and this helps. And everyone's like, okay, we don't care.
Whatever.
So anyway, you can, like, I think it's called Singer's Helper or something like that.
I will look for some of that. In the meantime, Nicole, what are
you
doing? Yeah.
We didn't even introduce ourselves.
We just got to say I'm Nicole with Tess Miles.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin with Singer's Helper, SAE International.
There we go. Oh, I didn't even put it in the show notes, what I have this week, but I so you guys just be surprised. I have the 2026 Hyundai Santa Cruz, which is about to be the 2026 Hyundai Santa Cruz gone. Like, it's discontinued.
The end of the line.
It's the end of the line, which I have to say, I was a little sad because having had this now in my driveway for about a week and driving it quite a bit back and forth, I really like this. Oh, he's showing
us
there
it
the
is.
Thing.
Singer's Helper. Singer's Professional. Singers.
I don't think it says helper. I think
it's
just
soothing throat spray.
Professional strength, because I get paid to sing. This one's probably expired, though. It's been in my bag for over a year.
Now so it's going to kill him.
I should probably get rid of this. I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's okay. So Hyundai Santa Cruz, which is their compact pickup truck that never really found its legs.
My neighbor bought one and he absolutely loves it.
Absolutely
loves it.
So what I think is going to happen with the Santa Cruz, one of my, my expert prediction, is that it's going to be one of those vehicles that once
like
it's
the element.
Gone. That people are going to want it, that it's going to be one of those things. Someone's going to hold on to one, or the people that still have them, it's going to be like, oh, you have a Santa Cruz. I love that car. No one's really buying it, but it's such a fun little vehicle.
It's just undercut by the Maverick. He has someone in his family who has a Maverick and loves their Maverick, but it drives better. It's like everything about it feels better than the Maverick. The Maverick's more utilitarian and, you know, he uses it first for stuff like that. But I think it drives so nice.
Like this driving around in the Santa Cruz is like you're driving a nice little like crossover or something. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like a stripped down, you know, base. Well, you've compromised because you can't afford a full-size truck. It feels like, oh, no, you wanted a smaller truck. Here you go. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I love its little cover. It has this cover on the top that rolls out, and it's a hard cover that rolls out, and you can stand on it. It supports – I don't have the number, which is terrible, but it supports – like a human can stand on that, and it's fine. So it's very sturdy.
And it's not powered. It's got that – but when you open it up, then there's a little cord there that you can grab to pull it back again.
Right. So, I mean, it's a great little truck. I'm sad that it's going. It's available with, you can get it. I have the one with all-wheel drive. You can also get it with front-wheel drive. The all-wheel drive trims start at about $31,000. Front-wheel drive, $29,700. So not a huge difference in the starting price there. But it goes up to, like, if they have the XRT now, which is the sort of their off-roady version of things when Hyundai puts XRT on something. That one's $41,000. The top trim, the limited, is $43,000. 700, which there's your challenge.
There's your problem.
There's your problem right there. It's just the price doesn't work for what's available in the market now. And granted, like the Maverick wasn't around when it was introduced. It was.
They came up pretty close to the same time.
Yeah, they were like.
I think this was first, wasn't it?
They were super close together.
Yeah, but like by less than 6 months.
Oh, was it six? Was it really that close?
Yeah, it was.
And the Maverick came at 20,000, so it really just like
the Maverick really undercut the Santa Cruz.
The thing that really won it for the Maverick, besides a lower starting price to begin with, was the hybrid.
Yeah,
and the fact that Hyundai never put that into this vehicle
is weird.
Yeah, and maybe they saw the writing on the walls though. Maybe they were realizing they didn't. Let's see, I'm double checking. Yeah, so it was summer. Okay, according to the AI, my Google Foo, says that the Maverick came out in late fall of 25.
No.
What? Yeah, that's not
right.
True.
No, it was introduced in like October of 2021.
Wait,
according to AI, the Maverick came out 4 years after it came out.
This makes no sense.
This is why you never rely on AI
now
for
anything.
Now
I've got one that says 22. Yeah, so I can't even figure it out. I was trying to Google, and AI is... AI, making rude gestures. I was trying to figure out how far apart they were. I believe you. Somehow they felt further. They felt like they were more distance. But so Hyundai Santa Cruz, fabulous car, truck that's going away. It's just gas. There, like Sam said, there's no hybrid. So your base engine, 2.5 liter four cylinder, 191 horsepower, 181 pound feet, or the turbo, which gives you 281 horsepower. That's a big difference. 191 to 281, significant difference. So if you're going to buy it, I'd buy the turbo because I feel like the base engine is just not going to have the same oomph. It's got two rows. You've got seating for five. And it feels like a crossover in there. That's the thing that's really nice. Not a super high step up. It's not... It has a roomy back seat. Like, other than looking in the back and going, oh, hey, it's not a hatchback with a cargo area. A little tiny bed back there.
From the driver's seat, it is literally identical to a Hyundai Tucson.
Right? It really does feel like driving a little car. And I loved it taking it to the city. I drove it to the airport, and then I parked it in the parking garage, which is always can be challenging because they're very tight spots, and that's all that was left. And when you get there and it's like, the only spots left are a few. You know it's the one that no one's chosen because there's like an F-250 on one side of you. And, somebody parked right on the yellow line on the other side of you. So you have just enough room to wedge a car in there. You can still wedge this in there because I did that. So it's even great if you're in like an urban environment because of the sizing. It can tow 3,500 pounds with the base engine with front wheel drive, 5,000 if you go up to all wheel drive. It has a 12.3-inch touchscreen. The tire trims get a 12.3-inch instrument cluster to match. You got USB-C ports. You have an attractive, comfortable interior. It's quiet. It's a really nice truck. It was fun to drive. I really enjoy driving this. This is the worst season for driving because there's just potholes everywhere and it's a mess. Still great. I nailed a couple of those potholes. Sorry, Hyundai. But it's still, you feel it. You're like, crud, I did that. But still, your fillings stay in and they don't shake right out of your teeth, So I truly enjoyed driving this. And I understand why it's going away, but I'm still saddened that it's going away because I think it's a great little truck. And you've got that little XRT trim if you want to have a little bit more fun. It's a little bit more... like off-roady and has like a terrain mode with mud, snow, and sand, so you can
which trim
get a
was yours?
Dirty. Mine is the limited. Sorry, okay. It took me a second. It's beautiful. It has all the bells and whistles and everything. It's a lovely truck. I thoroughly enjoy driving it. But again, $43,000. Does it feel like it? Kind of, sort of. It does because it doesn't feel like a truck. It feels like you're buying a top trim of a crossover of an SUV. That's not outrageous.
I know from personal experience, you can put at least 15 bags of topsoil in the bed of this thing.
So. I did not have a chance to properly truck it with bark mulch or topsoil because there's still snow on the ground. So welcome to spring in New England. So gotta wait another couple weeks before that's practical.
So when the Maverick and the Center Crew came out, there's this huge difference. It was like 20,000, like 27,000, I think, was the original price of the Santa Cruz. Now, because the Maverick has just creeped up like crazy, I looked to see what the base price for each of them is.
They're basically the
destination.
Same.
So I've already ruined the destination game today.
Oh, okay. We won't play the destination.
But also, like, Ford has some like acquisition fee that they've added to their
vehicle. Well, that's only if you're leasing. If you go on the Ford configurator and you click to finance instead of lease, it doesn't show you the acquisition fee.
Okay. So if you do get the paid by the leasee. Oh, okay. If you do it with the leasee, the difference between the two trucks is $665. So if you get rid of the leasing fee, it's like $1,300.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Maverick
between
list
two
right
different
now.
Between the two trucks, one is very. Again, they're both capable. I like them both. But in order to get the nicer truck, really, if you want to drive around, it's only going to cost you like $1,300 more.
Yeah. Because you got so the base, the cheapest Maverick, and I'm just like glancing at the consumer site, $28,145, and it's a hybrid. The most expensive Maverick is the Tremor at $40,640. But like I don't know if I was going to buy a Maverick. I like that Lobo. I just think it's fun.
Yeah. It looks so you can the big difference between the Maverick and the Santa Cruz was the price, and now that really doesn't.
Now it's not. When you're looking at 28 for one and 29 for the other, it's not. Like, and you for that 29, you're getting a much more comfortable, nicer, quieter, smoother riding vehicle than the Maverick. And I love the Maverick. Don't get me wrong, but. For that little extra bit, you get a lot more. You get a lot,
unless you want fuel economy.
Well,
that is the one downside.
You don't get the hybrid. That's
you don't get the hybrid. That is the thing. You don't get the hybrid.
That's huge.
So the difference.
You get that hidden trunk.
You do. So you know. So it's so I like the Santa Cruz. I get why it's going. It makes sense that it's going. Am I happy about it? No.
So according to Wikipedia. Production on the Santa Cruz started in June of 2021.
Okay.
And the Maverick started, I think, in November of 21. Because they started deliveries December of 21.
About 6 months apart. Okay. Yeah, they were that close. Wow. Okay. So that's the Santa Cruz that I'm sad to see.
So what was the bottom line on the one that you had?
Oh, on the limited that you have had? A Monroney.
Oh. Well, I know you don't get Monroney's, but I figured you had gone through the work of actually, you know, calculating it out. No,
I did not. I did not crunch the entire thing. I did not. So we're going with 43.7. It didn't look like it looked. It looked pretty close to stock. If there was something if there was something I missed, a random add on, it wasn't much. So it's probably around that price, that 44,000, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of a shame that it's going away, but it, you know, rumor has it that there will be something new, a new truck coming from Hyundai. That's what I've been seeing online.
Maybe it'll come next week. Wait, New York Auto Show.
It could be, perhaps
is next
on,
week.
On Wednesday.
It could be Wednesday,
no
right?
One
they have their.
On.
Is that when they have their press conference? They don't have a reveal or anything. They just have their standard press conference on Wednesday, right?
And this time, they.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
This time it's personal. Oh, sorry.
most of the time, you know, manufacturers will give us a heads up a few days in advance, you know, give us some information under embargo so we can get stories ready and stuff. This time, they're not telling us anything.
It's funny. Everybody keeps asking me, like, hey, Nicole, have you heard it? I'm like, no, nobody knows. It's a giant mystery. None of us know what's happening. None of us have any idea. And
random Pockert, he said they're going old school this time.
I can't remember the last time there's been a reveal at an auto show that nobody knew about. Like, you're like, I don't know what it is.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I hope it's not more robots because it isn't. I mean, at CES, like, hey, we did robots. We're like, yeah, okay, cool. But this is an auto
show.
That
was sort of disappointing at CES. It was cool, but this is a Boston Dynamics press conference is what it felt like.
Yeah. It's just, you're like, okay, for CES, you can do whatever you want when it comes to technology. But this is a car show, so it better be
a car.
Maybe it's just
something
a new
with
Santa
wheels.
Cruise.
Something
maybe there's a version of the Boston Dynamics robot with wheels.
Maybe. Maybe it's a truck. It's a
tiny pickup robot. Now they just finished showing us all the hand motions. I can just remember them having the Boston Dynamic, like the humanoid one. And it was like, look at all these things. And I'm like, he's scaring me a little bit.
It'll be a new compact pickup with hands.
With hands.
So it can load the bed by itself.
On the back, there'll just be a little robot mounted in the bed.
Yeah. So instead of you loading your own bags of mulch or topsoil into the bed, it will. There's an arm will just reach out, grab them off your cart, and pack them into the bed of the truck.
There you go. This is perfect.
Yeah. So the ultimate combination, you know, physical AI.
There you go.
And automation and everything.
All right. We'll see. That'll be the big news. We'll have to see next week what was revealed in New York. Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. To dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media.
All right. Well, I also had something from the Hyundai Motor Group, but from the other end of the spectrum. I had the Genesis GV80 Coupe Darth Vader Edition, which is not the actual name. I call it that, but it was actually the GV80 Coupe 3.5T ESC MHEV Black All-Wheel Drive, with the Prestige Black package. And basically,
that's a lot of words.
on the Genesis models that have the Prestige Black, basically it means that, like, literally everything, the only thing on this truck that was not black was the lights. So red,
they could have figured that
dual line tail lights on the back, red, you know, white headlights on the front. Everything else was black. The grill was black. The wheels were black. The badge, the winged Genesis badge on the hood was black. Inside, everything was black. The wood trim was open pore black wood trim. It looked really cool.
But yeah.
It was very, very black. Very, very black.
When the phrase, is it, what's the one thing? It's murdered out. Isn't that what they say when someone
like
that, does
yeah.
that to their vehicle? It's murdered out.
Yeah. You know, so with the Prestige Black, or with the 3.5 twin turbo V6 on here, you know, it has what they call a 48-volt e-supercharger. So basically, you know, what this is, essentially it's got three turbochargers on it. There's two exhaust-driven turbochargers, mm-hmm. And then there's a 48-volt turbocharger that instead of a turbine that's driven by the exhaust, it's got an electric motor, 48-volt motor on there. So it can spin up, you know, almost instantaneously. So you get essentially no turbo lag from this thing. So you got the compressor side of a turbo hooked up to an electric motor. And so this, you know what? I don't even know.
Robbie and your ice cubes. All I can hear is ice cubes going clink.
Sorry. I should have. Yeah.
It's
turbo
it's
lag. No more turbo lag.
Lots of power. And I will look up while I keep talking about this because I can't remember how much power it has, but it has a lot of
mega
power.
Mega power.
The mega power Genesis. Yeah.
And so this
409? Yeah. Is it 409?
That sounds right. Yes. 409 sounds right.
I'm looking it up yeah. right now. I'm going to look up the mega power super power Genesis. Keep talking.
So, yeah, the coupe, you know, the regular GV80, of course, is a three row, you know, more wagon shaped crossover. The GV80 coupe. Like something else we'll talk about in a few minutes, basically slash the back part of the roof off, make it look, you know, slightly coupier, and get rid of the third row. This is probably what Mazda should have done with the CX-70. You know, when they got rid of the third row from the CX-90, is just make it a coupe. Yeah.
But, what did you say for horsepower, Sam? What were you coming up with?
Robbie said 409.
409 is correct, with 405 yeah. pound feet of torque.
I
go, Robbie. I
just looked it up.
Oh.
I can't keep that much
that much data in your brain.
I remember when I was young and before I was a tech journalist, like I would have like the names of every processor available and then the names of every car stereo and their SKU and then the names of every like car that I liked and their engine code all smashed into my brain
back
and
then in the as olden I've gotten times.
Yeah, back in the olden times, but then as I've gotten older and I have to shove even more information in there every day, like I've given up trying to like, oh, like, let me remember the specs for this car. I'm like, that's not
first in, first out, you know, the oldest stuff gets
yeah
ditched.
All that stuff's gone, all yeah. It's all gone. Yeah. Alpine made car stereos, I assume, in the 90s. That's all I can remember now at this point.
Actually, I think they still do. I think they still sell those at Best Buy. But anyway, 8-speed automatic, all-wheel drive. You know, this has all the characteristics that, you know, that we've generally liked about the GV80. You know, obviously quite a bit larger than a GV70. So, if, you know, the back seat is roomier. So you got more leg room, more headroom. You know, You can fit three in the back, although two will be much more comfortable in the back. Three-zone climate control, heated and ventilated front seats. It's got those Ergo Motion seats, so after you've been driving for a while, it automatically starts to massage your back, work your lumbar, you know, so that you don't have to squirm around in your seat when you're on a road trip. The seat does the squirming for you. So you don't have to squirm.
Finally,
you get all the usual array of driver assist features that you get on Genesis models. You know, the Highway Drive Assist too. So it's a hands on system. You can take your hands off for about 30 seconds or so before it'll start to pester you to put your hands back on the wheel. But really, you know, just keep your hands on the wheel.
Keep your hands on the wheel at all times.
Yeah. But you know, it also has the driver monitor camera on there. And so if you like to drive with your hand on the top of the steering wheel, that will tend to block that, and you'll get alerts to, hey, I can't see your eyes. Pay attention to the road. So you might want to, like, you know, just move your hands down to the side of the steering wheel, which is frankly where they belong on modern vehicles with airbags anyway. If you have an airbag.
NHTSA changed from 2 to 10 to 9 to 3 because of airbags.
Yeah, exactly.
For the kids.
Yeah. And you know, if you have an airbag,
it's really for the adults.
Don't
They're
put your
the
hand
one
on the top of the wheel.
Like, they teach the kids to keep their hands lower now, but adults are still doing it the old way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you get stuck in your ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if I'm driving, I guess aggressively, it's always 9 and 3. But if I'm just cruising, it's 2 and 10 still.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think, you know, 2 and 10 is generally going to be fine.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's when you put your hand on the top of the wheel, when that airbag goes off, you're going to see your forearm come straight at your face, and it's not going to be fun.
Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? Except only once.
You're going to hit yourself. Probably going to break your nose. Probably going to break your forearm at least. You're not going to enjoy it. So, you know, keep your hands on the side of the wheel where they belong.
Mm-hmm.
When they did the refresh on the DV80s a couple of years ago, they went from two separate displays for the infotainment and the instrument cluster to just one big 27-inch OLED instrument cluster panel. And it's not even like what you find on most Hyundais, where you've got one sheet of glass that's actually got two separate displays under it. This is just one big sheet of OLED display under there. And it looks really nice. It's got all the usual features. If you're looking for something, you know, that is very premium feeling, very murdered out feeling, fairly quick and surprisingly fun to drive, you know, for a decently large SUV/crossover. This is definitely something to consider. The only option on this one was that the black paint, which was $650. So the grand total on this, which is the one downside, $91,545.
Oof.
Yeah. So
that's a lot of money.
That's rather a lot.
It's a bit of change. You want to take guesses at the destination?
Ooh, 16.
$18.95.
Robbie gets it. It was
$14.95. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a very comfortable, very smooth car to drive. When you put a seat cover on the back seat, you know, a couple of corgis will be very comfortable back there. When you go to pick them up from the groomer. So
party zone.
Yeah.
The party zone.
Whoop whoop.
So I sent Sam a video the day of a picture of a corgi being a corgi. And now, and I'm not mad about this, all I've got in my little Instagram feed is corgis. Like I said, one corgi video comes up. I sent it to Sam.
That's not a problem.
Corgis forever. Yeah.
You slow down, you watch, you share anything on anything, and boom, that's all you get.
That's all it took. I'm like, oh gosh, apparently corgis for the next month. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, good thing they're cute.
You could do a lot worse.
Yes.
I could do a lot worse for sure.
Yeah. One of the neat features that the GV80, like a lot of its siblings from the Hyundai Motor Group, has is the safe exit assist. So they've got radar sensors in the roof in the rear passenger compartment, so on either side, and there's also the outside radar sensors, the blind spot monitoring. If the outside sensors detect a car, if you pulled over to park, and you pulled over, you stopped, and the sensor on the left-hand side detects a car coming up in the lane beside you, if you go to try to open the door will not open. It'll lock the door, because it doesn't want you to open the door in front of a moving car.
Okay.
And then once the car passes, then it'll automatically unlock and let you open.
That's so nice.
Safe exit assist is a very cool feature.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Let's carry on. So let's see. Nicole, you went to New York the other day.
I did go to New York the other day. I got to see the Infiniti QX65, which is their new midsize crossover, I guess. There, it's very coupe looking. As you were talking about vehicles that are coupe-y. It has a coupe styling to it. I like it. I think it looks good. It starts at 53 and change, I think, was the pricing on it. So they're sort of considering it their new entry-level-ish vehicle. If you happen to be looking for a Genesis, it's a little bit more affordable. Wait, what happened?
Yeah, because the QX50 and QX55 are going away.
Yes, exactly. So the QX65 will be the entry level one. It looks beautiful. I mean, it looks very Infiniti. They have the autograph trim on display for us in New York to take a good look at. And it had that red exterior that is just absolutely gorgeous. Sunfire red, which has like flecks of gold. It's their sort of signature color for this vehicle. It gives Mazda's Crystal Soul Red Metallic a run for its money, but not quite. So it's a beautiful paint. Inside it has a red interior with all the, in the autograph, it looks like the typical autographs. It has the quilted stitching and there's, you know, leather trim on the door panels and on the center console and on the dashboard. It's beautiful. It has a Klipsch audio system that you can get. I think it's 20 speakers. It has, okay, now I have a question. I wonder if you, so it has, you know, Qi wireless charging. Is it Qi 2? Is that what we're calling it now?
Qi 2 is the new version of it. That's the one where they've basically integrated the magnets that, you know, when Apple brought up MagSafe on the iPhone a few years ago, and they basically contributed their spec for that to the Qi is an industry standard. They contributed the magnet spec to that. So they've integrated that into the Qi standard. So
is that all that the Qi 2 is?
It's also higher power.
It does do higher power.
I was trying to find that out. 25 watts.
That was something I hadn't had a chance to look up. And I was wondering if it was just, okay, so the magnet's now in the high. So it has Qi 2, which sounds like a move, Qi 2. Anyway, so it has a 12.3-inch displays, instrument cluster, and for the touchscreen, it looks beautiful. We didn't get to drive it, of course. It has a really big cargo area. There's 67.7 cubic feet when you fold the rear seats, 35.8 if you don't. It looks cavernous. In fact, I was doing videos of it, and I popped the lift gate so that I could see in the back. And they had a set of golf clubs, you know, lengthwise across the vehicle. Golf clubs fit in there. They had like four sets of golf clubs, and then they threw like a carry-on roller bag like on top of it to prove like you can smash anything in there. So it looks really good. They're very excited about it. They had, you know, a lot of their executives there talking about it. And the idea is they think that it's going to be an entry-level vehicle for people who want to get into Infiniti. It still does all the great Infiniti things. They're releasing a lot of cars. They have a lot coming up in the coming years. So they're really trying to reinvigorate. And there was sort of a, you know, at one point, and I can't remember who was saying this, but, you know, like Infiniti and Nissan, they need to exist together. You know, they I know they're the same company, but they're both important for both companies to succeed. And they think they've delivered the right vehicle for the right moment. It's such a popular segment. And this one has the luxury. Reportedly, it has the power and is wonderful to drive, according to their executives who spent some time already driving it. They say it's great.
How
do we know?
The executive said it's awesome.
The executive said it was awesome. But it does, I mean, in terms of what they showed us there, seeing the styling, seeing what they did, the quality of it, they did a good job. So if the drive lives up to that, I think this could be a very, very popular vehicle. And at a starting price of $53,990, it does make it achievable. The autograph, which they had, was what they had there, that one starts at $62,590. So, you know, you're looking at an extra $10,000. But just looking at that price and what I saw, it fits. It matches. You don't look at it and think, oh, that should not be almost, you know, $62,000, $63,000. Nope. It looks like it the pricing fits the styling and the quality of the vehicle. So I think it was pretty neat. I think it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like the GV80 coupe, you know, this is basically a QX60 with the back part of the roof chopped off to coupify it. And you know, from the driver's seat, it's identical to a QX60. Yeah, and but and the reason why you have so much cargo space is because with the roof chopped off, they ditched the third row. So you have all that room that used to be used for the third row is all cargo now. So
it's, which is a clever thing to do because, you know, if you wanted to, you when you get that coupe styling, it can really eat into your cargo space. So by how they designed this, you still get the cargo room. You don't have
the
third row.
Still the
row,
same size as a QX60. Same length as a QX60.
Yeah. So it is a best of both worlds thing. I really liked it. I thought it was great. I'm looking forward to driving this. The first drive for this is later in April, I think, is when the drive for this. So in about a month, we will know if it drives like the executive. So we'll see if Brian lied to me. I'll call him out. I'm like, Brian, you liar. This drove terribly.
How dare
you,
Brockman?
Yeah. The Brian, whose last name I can't say right, who is in the interview that I think you're putting into the show.
Marano, yes.
Marano, thank you. Because it's not spelled that way. And so now I have it in, and you say it looks like Mar, it has a G in it.
I had to look it up to confirm the title and the spelling.
It doesn't look like it should be pronounced the way that it's pronounced, and now I want to pronounce it like the letters, not like he said it. So we'll see. I thought it was an interesting vehicle. I think they've did a good job. It could be quite successful for them if it drives as nicely as Brian says. It's all on Brian's shoulders now.
Oh, no. That's a lot.
No pressure.
I'll mess it up.
So first, tell me your name and your title so I have it officially.
Yeah, so I'm Brian Marangia. I'm the Director of Product Marketing at Infiniti USA.
Okay, so QX65.
Yes.
Big deal. Why is it such a big deal?
Well, it's an all-new nameplate for us. It completes our trifecta of SUVs in the lineup. And it offers a bold two-row SUV with a lot of sporty influence to complement the QX60 and the QX80. One of the reasons we even came out with the car is because of the segment opportunity. It's a very large segment, about 500,000 units a year. So I think we're coming into a segment that's ripe for opportunity, and we're offering something that's a little bit different.
Why do you think it's, what makes it different?
It's a bit bolder in design, you know, 21-inch wheels on the autograph. You saw the Sunfire red color. So it has something, I think it has some curb appeal. It's maybe a little bit bolder for people that are looking for something a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
That's the feedback you've gotten from clinics and things. So we're excited about it from that standpoint, coming into a, let's face it, 500,000 units. Year, that's an established segment. So with an all new nameplate, so I think we came out with the right packaging, the right product to really tackle it.
Now, who do you think is the person who's going to get this? You know, I know the QX80 is the great big one. Where does this fall? Who is the person this is targeting?
Yeah, so there's really kind of like two buyer profiles, client profiles that we're looking at. You've got, and we're thinking we might skew male, actually. In terms of life phase, you've got some that are maybe in their mid-30s. They're stepping up from mainstream vehicles. Don't have a family yet, so they don't need to have interior space for people. They don't need a third row. But they're looking to reward themselves, kind of moving up in the world. And then the other side of that, people are maybe in their mid-50s or older. Like kids have left. So there's, they don't need to accommodate that anymore with a third row. And they too are looking for something that's, you know, a little bit edgier, reflection of themselves, a little bolder, and then rewarding too. At the same time, I want to make sure I point out, these are people that are active. And that's why we offer an interior cargo space.
Yeah, I saw the one that you have on display here. You have it. I went to take pictures of cargo, and there's like golf clubs in the back.
Yeah.
Like a suitcase on top of it. Yeah. So this isn't just a cruising around, looks pretty. You expect people to be doing stuff. You with us?
Yeah. It's not a car of compromise. And we did that with the golf bag, especially just to, you could talk about cubic feet, availability of space and all those sorts of things, but you've got to make it connect and make it real. So you put four golf club bags.
Oh, are there four in there? I just saw the one in the front. With
I think it's seven.
Yeah, if you seven really stack
it'll up. Fit seven all together. Okay, because right now there's what I could see there, one in the front and then like
I think that is a bit of an education piece that, you know, we talk about the design as being kind of an FX inspired, but one of the shortcomings of FX was that raked roofline, it did impact on cargo capacity.
Yeah.
And what the design team have done a really great job of is managing to maintain that kind of fastback line that you saw for yourself.
Yeah.
No compromise.
It's a huge cargo area when you open that up, which is impressive. So for the Infinity customer, because like you're saying, these are people who are moving up, you know, not generally selling these to someone who's 19.
So the one buyer's moving up, the other ones maybe been in luxury before.
So getting the moving up buyer.
Sure.
Like how are you, like, that's a hard buyer to get because it's the first time that they've ever got a luxury car, let's say. The world is their oyster. What about this do you think is going to make them say, I want the Infinity versus a Lexus versus whatever other premium brand they could get?
Sure. I think for us, I go back to what I mentioned earlier. We're coming out with a vehicle that's a bit different. It's got the same kind of exterior-wise, the capacities, right? And we'll get the spec sheet and kind of performance. But from a design perspective, we're looking at something that is a little bit edgier, that stands out a bit more. And we're going to bring people in that are looking for that. And that's kind of who we always attracted as a brand. You know, we've always come out, mentioned the FX earlier, and this vehicle is, in fact, like Dom mentioned, it's inspired by the FX. That's our heritage, and we kind of look at some of those out-of-the-box sort of executions, and that's who we built our brand off of, those clients coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not concerned about it. Plus, you know, from our... somewhere around 20% of our buyers, depending on the model, come from our Nissan.
So you get 20% just stay.
About
okay.
That. Yeah. So the feed up. So we've got to, the data tells us that, and we've got a history of that. And we don't go out there and try to get Nissan customers pillage. But there's people that are, look, if they're going to stay in the family, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Rather that than they go elsewhere. So we're, you know, pretty confident that getting the move ups isn't going to be an issue. So especially with the price position.
Yeah, the price is good. As far as the engine that's in there, you have the AC turbo.
Yeah.
Sounds like decent little horsepower numbers on there. Why the choice to go with that engine? Like there's, you know, hybrids and maybe some people are still doing electrics and back. And like, what's the choice between with choosing that?
Well, where it really came from with that engine, first of all, we were looking at powertrain options. That was one we have in the family, obviously. It's a QX60. And we sat back and said, all right, well, if we were to put it in this vehicle, we need to make sure that we can get it tuned in such a way that really complements the way the vehicle looks to the viewer from the exterior, from the design. It has to kind of go ahead. So the powertrain engineers got to work on doing just that. Because they understood what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it looks like it's a sporty SUV. And they executed it perfectly. I've driven the vehicle many times. And the acceleration is confident. It's fun. And I'm talking about everyday driving too. You know, they're talking about, you know, I'm in the city and I'm coming on, making a left turn in an intersection. And I reaccelerate.
Mm-hmm.
It moves. Merging onto the highway or I'm on the highway. There's a real push to the vehicle. So they did a great job tuning the powertrain to get it to where it matches the exterior design execution of the product.
Talk about matching the inside. Like when you open the door, fabulous interior.
Thank you.
And that one, like there's just this red leather everywhere and it's quilted and it looks like a luxury. It's like a gorgeous interior. It was a little, you see pictures and you're like, yeah, okay. But sometimes you open and you're like, oh, this is really good. So that's part of trying to make it match. I feel like this interior is leveled up compared to other Infiniti interiors.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because on the autograph, which is the one you're seeing here, it's I would say inspired by, but it matches the specifications on our autograph on QX60.
Okay.
Maybe it's the red.
Maybe the red just like pops.
But it's the semi-aniline leather interior is this, and it has a different stitch pattern, but it does have the quilting.
Yeah.
Something asymmetric in this one, which I've seen Alfonso said is inspired by the way that a kimono.
But the, you know, from the open pore wood to the quilting semi-aniline on the instrument panel on the passenger side, those all, if you put QX60 and QX65, again, different execution in terms of how it's stitched and you have different color options, but the premium quality is there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Okay.
To have an autograph name for our brand, it has to be special, and the interior is where it really has to shine. So this would not be, we wouldn't have called it an autograph, our top trim, if it didn't meet those specifications. And they're very similar to QX60.
And so has that autograph really gotten its feet under it as being like a premium trim within it? Because, you know, other, like there's Denali and things and different brands that are their premium that are really recognized. Do Infinity customers recognize that autograph?
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it for us is what you've noticed. People are taking notice of the interior and then some of the other components too, where you get the clips system, or we got 21 speakers in the vehicle, two of them in the headrest. There's certain pieces of the execution of autograph that are really starting to get attention, that are grabbing the attention of not just the media, but also obviously customers as well. So, but the proof's in the numbers, right? So QX80 is an example. 25% of our sales mix right now is the autograph on QX80.
Wow.
And it's around 22% on QX60.
Okay.
We expect that maybe even higher on QX65. So we're seeing it in the mix, right? It's grabbing its unfair share, and we're really excited about that. And what you'll see from us is we come out with additional products to fill up the lineup. Autograph will be part of that story.
Yeah. And if you had to pick one thing, just one, that is your favorite feature about the QX65. You can't say everything. You have to pick something that you think is your favorite feature. What would that be?
I really love the acceleration and the drive feel. It is a lot of fun to drive. For me, it's like if I'm driving a car and I'm kind of, especially the first time or first few times, and I'm really enjoying putting it through the paces, I start finding myself smiling and those sorts of things. And this car did that, and I'm so pleased about it. And we're really proud about it, just the work that went into it to get everything done. You know, it was a lot of blood, sweat, tears. But at the end of the day, how does the car drive? And it's very important. We like to consider ourselves a driver-centric brand, and part of that is just the way it drives, you know, the performance.
Right, right.
You can have all the nice accoutrements, right, and all those things, great sound systems and everything, but anyway, how does it drive? And I'm really proud of that. I really enjoy it.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's see. Where should we go next?
He's bouncing all over the place. He's not doing things in order.
I'm not. I'm not doing things in order. Let's go to Corvette next.
I'm looking at what he's highlighting. I'm like, where's he going? Okay. Yeah. Corvette.
So the other day, Chevrolet announced the 2027 Corvette Grand Sport. And this is, you know, it's yet another trim level of the Corvette. It brought back the Grand Sport. This is the fifth time they've done a Grand Sport version of the Corvette. So this sits above the base Stingray. So you got the Stingray as the entry level Corvette, then Grand Sport, and then Z06, ZR1, and ZR1X. And there's actually two Grand Sports now. It used to be just one. Now there's two. It's Grand Sport and Grand Sport X.
And dun, dun, dun. That
and,
cool.
and the X means it's a hybrid. So
I feel like the X should mean it's just super fast or something.
Well, I mean, it's that too.
Also super fast. Okay.
Also super fast. So the Grand Sport X basically replaces the E-Ray in the lineup, the Corvette E-Ray. So the thing about the Grand Sport and also the Stingray is they are the first vehicles from GM to get their new sixth generation version of their small block V8, which they're for the Corvette, they're calling it LS6. So for the last 20-ish years, apart from the Z06 and ZR1s currently, which have a 5.5 liter V8. All the Corvettes have had 6.2 liter V8s. So now they're going up to 6.7 liter. So basically, you know, it shares the same bore spacing that every small block V8 has had since 1955. Camshaft is still in the same place. Pretty much everything else has changed. They've got a longer stroke now than they had before. So that gives them the extra displacement from 6.2 to 6.7 liters. So the LT2, which is what was the base engine in Corvette before, it's 490 horsepower or 495 if you got the performance exhaust. Now the performance exhaust is standard and you get 535 horsepower and 520 pounds-feet of torque with the LS6. And then if you get the Grand Sport X with the hybrid, it's 721 horsepower. So the Grand Sports, the big difference between the Stingray and the Grand Sport gets the wide body look from that you had on the E-Ray, and it's on the ZR1, Z06. So you got the wider rear fenders, bigger wheels and brakes, but same amount of power as you get in the Stingray, at least for the base Grand Sport. And it's got the upgraded interior that they brought to Corvette last year. So you got rid of the row of buttons along the center stack. Those are gone. Those went away last year. So you got a little more power. And this engine, you know, there's some other things that they changed on here. It's now got dual injection. So you got both port and direct injection in there. Better combustion. It should have better drivability than the 6.2 liter did, which was already really good. So they're not revealing full performance numbers yet, but with the 6.2, I think the last time I drove one of those, I got something like 3.4, 3.5 seconds 0-60 time, and the E-Ray was 2.6, 2.7. So now you got a little more power in both of those. One other change with the hybrid that they brought over from the ZR1X, when they did the ZR1X last year, it's got the same battery that was in the E-Ray, but they're using more of it now. So they got a little more voltage from the battery, which means they also got a little more power from the electric motor that's driving the front wheels. And so you get a little better acceleration off the line, a little more sustained power because you're using more of the battery. It should be quite enjoyable to drive, I think.
Sounds like it. The pictures look fabulous. I love the photos, the engine.
Yeah.
Just that's wild.
And you know, then a version of this engine is going to be going into the full-size pickups for 2027, which are coming. They'll show those a little later this year, the Silverado and the Sierra, and then the SUVs, the full-size SUVs will get it as well. So this will be replacing the 6.2. And rumor has it that the 5.3 liter that they've used in the trucks is going to also bump up to 5.7 liters. So again, you know, same kinds of changes. So, you know, even while they've been working on EVs for years, they've also invested a bunch of money into the small block to keep it relatively relevant.
There you go. Do you think they'll sell a ton of them?
Of Corvettes, think, you know, or the trucks? I mean, the Corvette sells well for what it is. It's no Mustang. It's not going to, you know, it's...
They sell about 30,000 Corvettes a year.
Is that how many they sell?
Which is actually really good, you know, for this type of
vehicle. For a halo car, yeah.
Yeah.
Like if my hair were grayer, I'd be interested.
You don't have quite enough gray hairs, not yet.
I don't have enough gray hairs yet. Soon as I get into, you know, like World War II documentaries, then I'm like, woo, let's look at this Corvette.
I'm sure the price will go up a little bit. The current Stingray starts at about 72.5, I think, 73. So it'll probably go up to about 75 or something, which, given the performance that this thing is capable of, you know, when you compare it to Porsche 911s, Ferraris, McLarens, it's still a bargain.
Yeah.
It's still way cheaper than any of those cars. So, yeah, you know,
it's still a deal.
You get a lot of bang for your buck. Yeah. I mean, I added up the numbers the other day. Corvette only amounts to about less than 1.5% of Chevrolet sales. So,
wow.
It in and of itself won't matter much, but, you know, Corvettes draw people into showrooms and then they end up driving off with a Trax or, you know, or an Equinox or, you know, a Silverado or right. a Tahoe.
Something entirely different.
Yeah. All right.
Or Chevette.
A Chevette. Bring back the Chevette. My friend in high school had a Chevette. I remember that, a little red one.
It's like a Corvette, but for shoving.
But not at all. It's like a Corvette, but not.
Because of those last couple letters.
So, Robbie, tomorrow you are flying off to Alabama to visit the Mercedes factory there.
Yep.
I don't know what they're going to show you. But this week, Mercedes teased out something called the all-new Mercedes Maybach VLS. Basically, from what we can see in the teaser image, this looks like a Maybach version of their new midsize van.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's exactly what
I've seen the van, and
whatever
trim level you get, whether I just need a van or I need a fancy van, it's pretty rad. So if they're going to do a Maybach version, that makes
you're
a lot
all
of sense.
In on this idea.
I'm all in. Well, it's interesting because in other countries, like that's the sort of fancy limousine
in Asia, really especially. Yeah,
yeah, especially in Asia. If you visit Asia and you're like, oh, I want to treat myself to a car service, get a van. We used one like when we left Japan. We ended up getting a van to the airport. We're like, ooh.
Fancy.
So, yeah, if it was a Maybach van,
that would be pretty slick. Yeah, that would be amazing. That's exactly what it looks like from that one little piece that you can see.
They show you the rear corner window.
Yeah, that's that's the taillights of the van.
So. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see how these luxury vans do in the U.S. market. Like you said, in Asia, you've got stuff like the Volvo EM90. There's the Lexus LM, which is the Lexus version of the Toyota Alphard. And there's a ton of these in China, especially. They make a bunch of different vehicles like this in China. And then, of course, you know, Mercedes will also be competing with the Faraday FX Super One, which
is definitely happening
someday.
Totes.
Totally happening.
They're trying not to use the word van too much. I think just because there's just this weird anti-van sentiment in the United States.
Because
still.
Of minivans. Because minivans, the minivan mom thing ruined it.
Yeah, but that all SUVs are just minivans that are tougher to get into.
They don't
That's
have
it.
Sliding doors. It's the yeah. Nope.
It's just like a
vibe.
Worse minivan. That's
they
what
do
it,
feel different yeah. in the front, though. Like the minivans, it's the windshields are different. Like they're so long.
Yeah.
I don't know. Minivans have a different vibe in front.
They're easier to drive. They don't.
This is more of a vehicle to be driven in than to drive.
Yeah, this one doesn't really count for the front. Yeah.
This is for getting out on the red carpet at the Oscars.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
With your big, poofy designer gown.
Yeah, with the sliding doors and everything, it's much easier to get in and out. You got the nice big reclining seats in the back. Mm-hmm.
The people that end up buying minivans end up loving their minivans.
Oh, of course.
They're just like, I can't believe I was going to buy an SUV. And I bought this, and now I can take my kids, and I also ride bikes, and I also camp, and I also this, and all of that I can do in my minivan.
Everybody who buys one loves it. Like, true, you know, good point. I've literally never had known anyone
who
had a
minivan.
They just
don't want to be seen in it.
They just have to hide.
They love it. They just don't want to be seen in it.
Some of them become like, you know, they become ambassadors for the minivan. They're at their friend's house. They're like, whoa, you got a Tahoe? Cool. Look at this. I can actually put things in it.
Look at how cool my thing is. My thing is cooler.
Yeah,
I can just press a button. The doors open up.
Doors
I don't have to worry about
right
the kids
open.
Slamming the doors open and dinging other people's cars in the parking lot,
or your car in the driveway. You know,
exactly.
You have the minivan, then you have the halo car of your driveway.
Right?
Maybe
the halo next to your Corvette.
Next to your Corvette, you have your minivan and your Corvette, and you're like your kid just opened your SUV right into your brand new Corvette. Oh, kids.
That would suck.
Kids. That's why you get the van.
Yeah.
Jump in.
Like you're making sound effects for the door.
Yeah, I can't remember. Did they say which when they're actually going to reveal this thing? I think it's coming up pretty soon. It might even be this week.
I don't know.
They've already shown the VLE.
Right. So it's basically a fancier version of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've shown last year they had the Vision V concept, which is basically the direction they're going with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this will be, you know, this is absolutely a car to be driven in, not to drive.
Yeah. No. And maybe some lucky guy is going to be the driver. Like, I feel like that would be, if you're going to have to cart somebody around as a limo driver, if like, we need you to drive this, I'd be like, all right, sure. All right. I'll suffer through and I'll do my job.
I drive the minivan? Oh, I did. Like in a parking lot, like doing circles because it has all wheel steering and it has auto parking stuff. And
all the fancy.
Yeah, it was pre-production. It had stuff all over the place, so I couldn't take pictures inside the van. I was just inside the building with the vans because it was outside the building.
Because then they have to hide it from the public. You can't have anybody seeing it. It has to be secret.
Secret. Especially if everyone knows it's a big Mercedes-Benz, like, you know, logo in front of the building. So,
yeah. What's that? I'm betting a Mercedes.
If you're a spy photographer, you're like, well, I'll just hang out here.
On the not so secret side is the 2027 Nissan Sentra. No, not Sentra. Versa.
What?
The Nissan Versa.
I was like, that is a secret if it's back.
Yeah. Well, the Sentra is, I mean, we do have a new Sentra. But the Versa is something that we're not getting here in the States because we can't have cheap stuff. The Versa is made in Mexico. Customers in Mexico already started getting deliveries. Basically, this is just a refresh of the Versa. It's not really all new. It's, you know, looks like mostly carryover powertrain. They got a new front end on it that looks kind of like the new Murano. You know, so it's a little different look on the front end, and an updated interior. That's about it.
That's like the Santa Cruz. I'm sad it's gone. I mean, it had its little place. Those nice little affordable vehicles, but.
They got the kicks. They're fine.
And the, you know, the thing with the Versa is, you know, it was available for under $20,000. It was the last car in the U.S.
Cheap.
It was under $20,000.
Cheap car.
Yeah.
And it was not a bad car. I mean, it's not great car,
wasn't.
But, you know, it rides and handles decently. It's reasonably roomy, you know, and, you know, like the Maverick, you know, it's not fancy materials inside. But everything was put together nicely. You know, it works.
Yeah, even like it was literally the perfect starter car. If you're just a commuter, I just need something that I can. I don't care. I want it to be cheap. I'm going to put a million miles on this thing. I just need a car that's okay. There you go. Here's your car.
Nissan makes a really good inexpensive car. Mm-hmm. Not cheap car. I don't want to call them cheap because they don't feel cheap for the price. They make a really good, inexpensive car, which, to be honest, is way tougher than making a really nice, luxury car. Because a luxury car, you can just keep adding prices to it. Because, like, well, we can just put everything we want on it. Just keep making it more expensive. It's luxury. But making, like, a good, inexpensive car is really, really difficult.
It's not an easy thing to do because it doesn't... It's so hard to make it not look cheap, like you said, Robbie. To make it just look like a car you want to drive and that you enjoy sitting in and you're not thinking, oh, gosh, I can't wait till I can get to another car. That is not an easy thing to do. Like a lot of times a car that's inexpensive, you sit there, you're like, oh, yeah, and, this is why that price is that price.
And the automakers, the amount of money they make off. The profit margins on these are smaller than, say, you know, a big truck that's just a truck, but they put luxury items in it. It's you know, people should buy these, but they don't. It's a whole weird thing.
Yeah.
We're a very weird country.
We have our quirks.
We are very, yeah.
All right. Audi, 20 years ago, was really starting to make a big push for clean diesel. And, of course, we know how that turned out.
Womp womp.
Which is to say, not well. But along the way, they had some amazing success with putting diesel engines into race cars and winning the 24-hour Le Mans six times with diesel-powered cars. And then, you know, they decided, you know, we should build some high-performance diesel road cars, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some really interesting stuff. Like, they built a version of the Audi R8 with a 5.9-liter twin-turbocharged diesel V12 that they...
As you do.
As you do.
Right.
Had 493 horsepower and twice as much torque as the V8. So I think it was or somewhere around 800 or 900 foot-pounds of torque. Compared to the V8 engine that was also offered in the R8. They worked on it for several years. And unfortunately, it was 738 foot-pounds of torque.
Jeez.
Which is just bonkers. And they said they're going to put it in production, and they kept saying they're going to put it in production, and it never quite made it to production, unfortunately. At around that time, you know, companies like Bosch and of course, you know, Volkswagen Group and others were really promoting diesel. You know, they wanted to bring more diesel vehicles to the U.S. market. Bosch had a fleet of vehicles here, and so did Honeywell too, because they were doing the turbochargers for a lot of these of European diesels that they brought over here for journalists to evaluate. And I got to spend a few days driving a European spec Audi Q7 with their 4.2-liter diesel V8, which they never sold here. They only sold the Q7 with the 3-liter V6 diesel here. But the 4.2-liter diesel, oh, man, was that sucker surprisingly quick.
Yeah.
And they did actually, while they never built the production version of the R8 diesel, they did put that 5.9-liter V12 into a limited run of the Q7s. So they built about 500 or so of those Q7 V12 TDIs, which never had a chance to drive one of those, but that would have been nuts to drive that thing.
You could tow the truck that's towing your fifth wheel with it.
Yeah.
There you go.
What are you doing with your Q7 this week? Well, let me tell you. This is a TFL video. Hold on. Let me call Roman.
Yeah.
Right?
Get one of these. Get a truck. Get a fifth wheel. See if you can tow the truck with the fifth wheel with this.
All right. So a couple of weeks ago, Honda announced that they were canceling all their North American EV programs.
Womp womp.
And, you know, When they made that announcement, I reached out to Afila at the time, and they gave us a statement basically saying, you know, Sony and Honda are in discussions about the fate of the Afila program. It sounded from the statement that they gave us like Honda did not give them a heads up that they were canceling the Zero Series.
Can you imagine that? You're like, wait, what?
I wonder if Honda was like, if we tell anyone at Sony, they're going to leak it.
Yeah.
We can't tell these people. These are not serious people.
Well, if they were serious people, they wouldn't be building a car.
They're trying to build a PlayStation with wheels.
Yeah. So two weeks after that announcement, Afila finally announced, yep, we're canceling the development and launch of the Afila 1 and the second car that we just showed a concept of 2 months ago at CES. So, if you were waiting for your Afila 1,
I don't know.
They just showed that. It's just amazing. I know times and industries and
stuff,
whatever
tariffs,
stuff's happening, tariffs, blah 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 blah
markets, blah.
But still, it's like wow. Everything you can't even, what we could be saying on the air right now in 2 months, lies, damn lies. Everything is wrong.
Everything we say now is a lie. I talked to Honda about, because I was wondering about their solid state plans, because they're, you know, they have a pre-production line going right now with solid state batteries. And yeah, they're still doing that. They're still working on solid state. They're like, well, you know, the news is for North America.
Yeah, they're still building EVs in the rest of the world.
Yeah, we have joint ventures in China. They have like Honda sort of divisions in China that they're building EVs. You know, they have EVs in Japan. You know, I think they want, you know, expand EVs in other parts. They were just like, yeah, we're just not going to do this now.
Yeah. Which, you know, not worth it.
I'm just like, I really think the Honda brand, like, really would have carried the sales of these, like the Prologue. But I don't work at Honda, so it's not my decision.
I think,
but they're still working on solid state, which is good. The more people that are working on solid state, the more companies.
I mean, that's good at least, because that's actually really cool. I'm excited for that. So please don't discontinue that too.
Whatever. Stop. One thing we could potentially see is, you know, at the Japan Mobility Show in October, they showed a concept called the Honda Zero Alpha, which looks a lot like the Honda Zero SUV that they were going to sell here, but it's a little bit smaller. But that one is actually on a different platform, different hardware. I think one of the reasons why they canceled the Zero Series is I think it was just going to be too expensive. And the Zero Alpha was designed for markets in Asia and India, where it was going to be sold at a lower cost. Maybe we'll see them bring that vehicle over here, bring that EV platform to North America.
You really think so? You think it could happen?
I think
if they can make money selling it everywhere else, and it's not too, and if they're already thinking about homologation for the US with this vehicle, just in case, then I could see that. Because I think, you know, the Honda E was killed because one person said, hey, don't make this for the U.S.
Yeah.
It wasn't killed. It was killed for U.S. market. And then we all lost our minds because we really wanted it. And they're like, no, you can't have it because it's not. We can't start over. We would have to start over in order to make this vehicle for the U.S. market.
And we shall not do that.
So it's Honda's yeah.
So we'll yeah. we'll see what happens. Let's see. Volkswagen's current boss, Thomas Schaefer, did an interview with Top Gear magazine. And in there, basically, you know, a lot of people have complained, including us, about the recent Volkswagen vehicles and, you know, the sliders, the touch sliders for the temperature controls and assorted other things. And, what Schaefer said was that proper door handles and buttons are non-negotiable for me. And he basically threw Herbert Diess, his predecessor as CEO of
right
Volkswagen Group, directly under the bus, drove over him and then drove back again just to make sure.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, this is what you need to do as an automaker. You just have to come in and say, you know, we made mistakes and we're going to fix them. And that's what we're going to do. I mean, Nissan did it in a very nice way compared to this.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Schaefer said there was a spirit of iPhone-ish kind of design and utilization that you could see coming through in many companies. He said it was a little bit difficult to get the designers off that idea. You know, it's actually not that hard. All you got to do is just say no.
We're not doing that anymore.
Stop doing it. We're done.
Just say no. That's all you got to do. And finally, you know, Diess apparently never did. Schaefer said no. And so now all the new VW cars are getting proper buttons and switches and door handles. So
I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
Just put some door handles on cars. My God, people.
Hopefully they will put those in the new Atlas too.
Hearing you say that though, Robbie, how ridiculous. Like, oh, please, just door handles. Such a simple thing. Like, and you're begging for it.
Because everyone was like, oh, well, the turbulence and you know, drag coefficient. I'm like, so you're trading 2 miles of range on an EV for an annoying door.
Yeah. That you have
for
to
a door that
with
makes
forever.
You want to scream every single time you open it.
Yeah. I think people are fine with losing the 2 to 5 miles.
I think you're right.
And then, yeah, I've got one in here that I've got labeled as don't be a jackass. I actually saw this video pop up a couple of days ago of some bonehead driving a BMW in California in the bike lane behind some cyclists.
Like, oh, wow.
Fully in the bike lane. And which is kind of ridiculous because the bike lane is actually narrower than the car. So he was.
How's he fitting in there? I feel like that's dangerous for your car as well.
Yeah. And he, you know, he's honking the horn and everything. And he almost ran these guys off the road. And so one of the guys was shot some video of this. So they got video of the car and, you know, one of the cyclists, you know, did, you know, was kind of a bonehead too. You know, he squirted his Gatorade from his drink bottle on the car. And then the passenger in the car threw something at him and then they took off, but they got video of the car, got the license plate. And, yesterday police in, I think in Newport Beach or somewhere, went and they arrested the guy, and also impounded his car. It's like, you know, don't be a jackass, you know, just stay in the car lanes, let the cyclists have their bike lanes. You know, don't do stupid stuff like that.
Do stupid
stuff. Here's the thing. Like, someone's squirting your water bottle or Gatorade at a car. The person had already instigated trying to kill them. The loser in this situation is always, you know, you're in a big metal box. This person's on a tiny little metal and rubber machine. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone tries to kill me, my initial reaction is like, oh, F this guy. Because that's literally what this person's doing. This is like an almost attempted murder, essentially. Because car versus bicyclist car always wins.
Yeah.
Car versus pedestrian. Car always wins. So, and I lived in Orange County, and let me tell you, there's a lot of a-holes in Orange County that drive like this. When you talk about the BMW driver, Orange County is just like silly with people like this who believe that they are above the law. I don't know what their deal is. It's
Don't do that. Don't be a jerk.
And then Jose Munoz did a talk the other day and announced that by 2030. Hyundai is going to launch 36 new or significantly enhanced models in North America.
36
over the next 4 years.
Just Hyundai, not even Hyundai Genesis, just Hyundai?
Well, it's Hyundai and Genesis.
Which is only slightly less crazy, but still.
Yeah. And Kia.
I don't think Kia was included in this.
Oh, well, there you go.
This is just Hyundai. Yeah.
Hyundai and Genesis. Yeah. Yeah, it's just Hyundai and Genesis.
That's a lot of vehicles.
Yeah, and most of these, 80% of these models are going to be produced in the U.S. And they're going to have 80% local U.S. parts sourcing. So this kind of goes along with what they had announced last year, $26 billion investment in the United States. This is the next step in that. So they're going to be building... Most of what they sell here is going to be built here from parts that are also sourced here. Not necessarily from American companies, but, you know, from their suppliers that build their plants in the U.S.
It's also enhanced. So how many cars is Hyundai and
Canada, U.S., and Mexico. So there's a few of these models that, for example, will probably only be for the Mexican market.
That we won't get. Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's still a lofty ambition.
Yeah,
that's like 11 cars. I think they sell 11 cars in the U.S. right now.
Hyundai?
Roughly. That's not talking Genesis. So yeah, no, this is it sounds like a lot, but if you like, okay, well, there's 11 of these, and then
11 refresh. They refresh everything. That's 11 refreshes.
Most of Hyundai's stuff goes on a 4-year product cycle.
Yeah, so most of the stuff will be refreshed. So there's that. 9, 10, and then they'll
Well, I get 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So,
seven, eight,
yeah, we're going to get
a
new Tucson probably before the end of the year. We're going to get new Elantra is coming up soon. Sonata is due for a redesign. The Santa Fe is probably going to get updated maybe next year. That's a bunch of them right there. We're going to add some more models to the Genesis lineup. Going to be interesting. And, you know, there's whatever it is they're going to show us on Wednesday is part of that, too. So
is one of them. While we're talking about, because I didn't, this isn't your show notes, I don't think. Wait, it's not. Remember a couple weeks back, maybe not even a couple weeks, we were talking about the Hyundai Palisade having a stop sale because of, now they have added the Telluride to that. So okay. I felt like I wanted to mention that for anybody who might have purchased one or whatever. So the top trims of the Telluride also have the same issue, which we were kind of debating. Like, they're kind of the same, like, same company. Oh, what's that? So they've stop-sailed that guy, too, just in the SX Prestige and X-Line trims.
Yeah, because those are the only ones that have the power-folding rear seats.
Right, right. So
the,
also
the ones with the manual seats are fine. It's just
you're fine. It's just
power
the power seats.
Seats
that can be an issue. I felt like we should mention that because it popped into my head. So,
all right. And then I think the last thing I want to touch on is the E15. The EPA this week approved nationwide deployment of E15, which means that you can. Your gasoline, when you go to the gas station, up to 15% of the fuel that gets pumped out of there into your vehicle can be ethanol. Currently, most of the gas sold in the U.S. is E10 or slightly less, so up to 10%. They're raising that to 15%, which means that you probably won't be paying any less for your gasoline, although theoretically you should because the ethanol is cheaper. But, you know, gas stations probably will not reduce the per gallon price, but you will get less fuel economy. So you will have to buy more E15, and your engines will make less power. So there's that.
This is essentially just watering it down to extend our gas supply.
Basically. Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because E15 in the winter, it like makes a little bit more sense. In the summer, it's just like, oh, we're just going to evaporate your gas.
Yeah. The thing about E15, I did a study probably about 7 or 8 years ago for the American Fuels Institute, I think. We took a look at E15 and E20. And the thing is, if an engine is actually designed to run on those higher ethanol concentrations, then you know, you can actually get better efficiency if you design it because the ethanol gives you higher, raises your octane level. So you can actually get better efficiency if you design the engine for it. But just throwing more ethanol into older engines, not going to help. It's going to make things worse, not better.
Does it matter how old your engine is? I'm at, like, put on your engineering hat, Sam.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a certain, is there a certain point where you actually have to worry about that?
Yeah, part of the reason why they limited it to E10 right now, or have limited it to E10, is because that's a low enough concentration that it doesn't really cause problems with older engines.
Okay.
And the problem you have with ethanol in engines is ethanol tends to absorb water from the atmosphere, which means that you tend to get more corrosion in your fuel lines and things like that, and more wear on your valve seats. When you get like flex fuel engines that are designed to run on up to E85, they've made the basic design is the same, but they have upgraded the fuel lines and valve seats and things like that to withstand that extra corrosion so they don't have a problem with that corrosion. This could start to cause a problem with some older engines if you're running them on E15.
Okay. So not great.
No, not ideal. I think that is it for this week. So we can let Robbie go because I think you have to go somewhere.
So I gotta go.
Thanks everybody for listening. And we will be back next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.